What is up, Fight Fam? From the ever-beautiful City of Angels, this is Cage Free Chicks, a combat sports-centered podcast by women, about women, and for everyone, where we take a look into the world of combat sports through the female lens and discuss how martial arts have helped shape some of the toughest women on the planet. As always, we're your favorite Cage Free Chicks, Nadia and Michelle.
For episode 9, we're joined by Carolyn Pierce, a former international heptathlete and bobsledder, as well as established TV sports anchor, reporter, commentator, and event host. She currently hosts the Professional Fighters League on ESPN, as well as UFC for BT Sport in the UK. She's a published author and go-to fitness and nutrition consultant with a first-class honors degree in sports science and master's degree in nutrition and exercise physiology from Loughborough University. You may also know her as Ice from the revival of the hit TV show UK Gladiators on Sky One. Enjoy!
Awesome. Okay, well, Caroline, we're live. Thank you so much for being here.
No,
again.
My pleasure. Thanks.
Yeah, we're really looking forward to having this conversation and telling people all about you, because in a lot of ways, I don't know, I feel like you're like the woman on the forefront of combat sports in Europe. You know, there's so few sort of people, especially women, kind of reporting. So we're really looking forward to talking to you and getting a kind of different perspective than we have had on the show thus far. So thank you for being here.
Yeah, thank you. No, I'm living here in Los Angeles now, but I'm very much still tied to BT Sport, mm-hmm. the British network, you know, for which I broadcast for select events out here, UFC London, the events back home. And even in the short time I've been, well, I say short time, maybe over 5 years now, I've been covering the sport, just the recognition in the UK, especially mm-hmm. in Europe, that it's got has just gone beyond what I'd have imagined when I first started. And you find those people that in the UK that have been fans for years, and they know you cover it, and they know that you love the sport. And we were just talking about this, yeah. They just want to talk about fights. It's like they finally found their person, that one person that gets it and wants to talk about it. But there's more and more people now. And yeah. it's nice for me coming out here stateside and just realizing, or I already knew, just how many more people are savvy about mm-hmm. martial arts and MMA. Yeah.
How did you end up in this world?
And I'll be honest, not originally by choice. So I've always been involved in sport. I was a heptathlete, which is the 7 track and field events. I was a bobsledder. I was the brake woman for the British bobsled team. I did the world championships in Calgary, where they filmed Cool Runnings at exact track. So wow. my world has always been sport. I studied sports science and physiology. And I was actually covering I was doing sports news. I was doing World's Strongest Man. I was doing some motorsports. And BT Sport launched as a channel back mm-hmm. in, was it 2013, something like that. And I was talking to them about the MotoGP. I wanted, mm-hmm. you know, I've been a huge motor fan my whole life. And then they randomly just said, well, we've got the rights to the UFC. What do you know about the UFC? And I was always told by mentors of mine, you say yes and you learn. So I went, decent knowledge. I'm thinking GSP, Anderson Silva, yep, two fighters there that I know the names of.
It's a good place to start.
That's what you need. Do you know what? There wasn't that many other, and maybe they specifically wanted a female to go in the mix with the male mm-hmm. analysts, et cetera. And I said, yeah. And so it started, in all honesty, as just an opportunity. And an ex-boyfriend of mine, who was my boyfriend at the time, sorry, he had done some mixed martial arts himself. He'd fought, he'd done a lot of judo as well at national level. So I had a good kind of like guide and mentor right. at the time. And, you know, through the course of our shows, we used to do a weekly magazine show where we'd mm-hmm. have the fighters on, the coaches on. I mean, you know, early days, Conor McGregor's on the show with John yeah. Kavanagh before he was the Conor McGregor we know him as today. And I fell in love with it. And just getting to know the athletes, and as an athlete myself, I could relate to the discipline, the multidiscipline nature of what yeah. they do, their mentality, yeah. how nice they all were. And then we're previewing and reviewing shows every week. And I just lived and breathed it. And then when I found myself in the UK at 4 in the morning watching Fight Pass on my little laptop on my own in the dark, I was like, I guess I'm a fan now as well. This isn't just a job.
I'm stuck in. Yeah. Well, I never actually thought about it. I just thought of this now that you said it. You know, you being a heptathlete, is it? Mm.
Yeah.
Heptathlete. And that's like a, like you said, multidisciplinary sport. Mm. And then coming to MMA, which is also multidisciplinary. It's like the juggling of so many things. I'm sure yeah. you were able to relate in many ways.
That's what I appreciate. And then when a lot of the fighters get to know me, and you do get to know them over the course of time, I think they both respect and appreciate that in me, that I understand the training that goes into yeah. this kind of thing. I remember we were in Tokyo, Josh Barnett mm-hmm. was fighting, was it Roy Nelson? And I was doing an event for Fox. Yeah, I was covering it for Fox at the time. And I remember he was nice enough to me, but off camera, I got talking to his coach and telling him all about what I do as well. And I think he must have relayed that to Josh. And then our next conversation had a whole different fire underneath it. It was, you know, this, as if he's talking to another athlete, just a reporter that's holding a microphone in front of his face. And that was important to me. You know, not everyone's going to know what I've done in my sporting history, but I think you speak a similar language when you've been there and you've done it at that level yourself.
Yeah. We were talking about you on the way over here and I was like, yeah, she's a heptathlete. And we're like, because I was like, oh, she's really fit.
Most people are like, what's that?
Well, you know, because I was like thinking, I was like, oh yeah, I know that you're really fit. And then I was like, oh yeah, she's a heptathlete. So you're really, really fit.
So it's like, oh, just a jack of all trades master. Yeah, no, I don't know.
And Nadia was like talking about how we're going to start the conversation. So she was joking, saying, we're going to say, so Caroline, as a Renaissance woman,
which you very much are, it was one of those things. I loved every event, and you know, for those that don't know, the heptathlon is over 2 days. You do hurdles, high jump, shot put, 200 meters day one, and then long jump, javelin, and 800 meters day two. It's all points scored.
I'm tired. Just thinking.
But it's one of those things where it's not. You have that one chance, and it's done. Mm-hmm. Say your hurdle time wasn't what you wanted it to be. You were slightly down. You've got high jump. There's always another event. So it becomes this kind of mind mapping, point scoring, come down to that last event. She can't beat me by 3 seconds. I've got 1 second on her. You know, it's a different mentality, but it's a tough mentality.
Like a sum of all the parts sort of thing.
Yeah, compounding, but you almost kind of get this camaraderie between yourself and the other athletes during the course of 2 days, because you're pulling each other along. You might be competitors, but you know, you're all in this kind of 2 day adventure together.
Wow.
And then I wound up bobsledding after that, which they recruit in the UK. They recruit a lot of track athletes into bobsled. Okay. We have an artificial push track down at Bath University, and I got asked to try out. And I think less than a month later, I'm in Calgary hurtling down at 80 miles an hour. How did I end up here? But I kind of like
crazy.
It.
Crazy.
And that was fun. And then injuries retired me a couple of years afterwards, but I stayed in sports broadcasting and sports televisions. Just gives me that way of feeling connected to a sport, connected to athletes and that whole environment.
How did you get into like the actual broadcast? Like how did you make the transition from being an athlete to deciding like, oh, I want to be.
Yeah. Well, my first taste of television was soon after retiring as an athlete, the show UK Gladiators, which is the same as your American Gladiators.
Right. Yeah.
That relaunched. So I grew up watching it and I always used to say to my mum I wanted to be a gladiator, much to her amusement, and was kind of like pat on the back. And it came back and I got myself in a position where I was auditioned and I got the job. So I got a taste for television and that was fun, but I was playing a character and I'm not really an actor, actress, whatever. You know, I was playing a bad character, which doesn't sit too well with my personality either. It's like all this stuff coming out my mouth, like, yeah, go get him. I'm like, oh, I felt stupid.
You're so nice.
Then I'd smile and they'd be like, no, this is not the idea. You're bad. And they called me Ice based on my bobsled background of winter sports. That's pretty cool. Yeah. Bleached my hair white, which destroyed it for years.
Oh.
And luckily they decided against it being blue, but oh my. So anyway, that got me a taste for television. But during the course of that time, I was like, well, how do I combine my love of television and that kind of live environment with my passion for sport? So although my degrees were not in journalism, they were sports science, physiology, more kind of science-based, I started doing some courses and found a channel called LA Muscle TV. It was linked to a supplement company that gave me free rein to go to expos with a microphone and a team and kind of both produce and present different live expos and you know, you put together a showreel and kind of go from there. And my first kind of break was covering the World's Strongest Man for Channel 5. You know, the Hathor Bjornsson from Game of Thrones, you know,
from Marius Pudzianowski.
Marius Pudzianowski,
Brian Shaw,
your American guy. Yeah. So Zydrunas Savickas, who was the Lithuanian that reigned for so long.
Yeah, I would always watch them.
I loved it. And the funny thing was, Jeff Capes, who was a British strongman that won World's Strongest Man. He was also an Olympian, Olympic champion in shot put. He was my shot put coach when I was doing track.
Okay.
So I kind of had these little insights into the World's Strongest Man world. And in the UK, it's a big Christmas special. Like Christmas, you watch World's Strongest Man on television. Yeah, it's a big thing. So I started doing that. And I guess, that got me in with IMG. And from there, I started some British Superbikes and doing some commentary on Eurosport. I did some CrossFit Games commentary and yeah, kind of went from there. And then it was when BT Sport launched, as I said, as a channel, they gave me UFC and ran with it from there.
Yeah, I was going to ask how, because it seems like, you know, World's Strongest Man is not necessarily like the biggest sport ever. Yeah. And like you said, you're into motorsport. So it seems like you're already kind of into these sort of niche things and open-minded,
This is the way I looked at it. When you look at broadcasting and sports broadcasting, there are hosts and presenters that have those jobs. They're not going to suddenly get rid of them. And it's a very small world and very difficult to find a space for new people. Yeah. I think we like this familiarity of seeing the same face hosting our sport, you know.
And it's often like former athletes or whatever.
Yeah, so exactly. Or just established hosts that have been around, or commentators play-by-play that have been around a long time. So I knew that I wasn't going to suddenly step into the BBC and take the football or soccer, as you'd say, hosting positions. So I was like, okay, maybe I can be the big fish in the little ponds of, smart, you know, these other niche sports. And to be honest, in the UK, UFC was kind of like that, you know. It wasn't as well known. So nowadays, it'd be probably a more competition to have the job that I've had for many years. But that back then, not so much. So it went from there. And then from doing BT Sport, I did a lot of European stuff, European events for Fox Sports, FS1, and then Fight Pass utilized me as well.
Right.
And then I actually moved stateside and ironically ended up doing more for the British network again as the US correspondent. So that was kind of weird. Yeah. I was going back to Europe to work for Fox and coming out to the US to work for the UK. And now it's led me to the Professional Fighters League, the PFL, which we're heading into the second season.
So crazy, yeah.
It's so exciting. And for those that aren't familiar with it, you will be because it's on ESPN. Yes. It's on the same platform as USC this year. We were on NBC Sports last year, which was also awesome. It's a fight league. It's a true sports format. So if you think about football, basketball, whatever it is, we have a regular season where they're playing, fighting for points. The top eight go through to the playoffs. They fight twice in a night, is brutal. It's, you're commentating and hosting. You're like, hey, he was just in there a minute ago. Oh, Jesus. How long rest did he get? Like 20 minutes? A bit more. Yikes. But yeah, they do a two-rounder and then a three-rounder during the night. You can only have five rounds in one given night. And then the winners, that's like a literally win and progress, lose and go home. The winner fights at the end of the season. And last year it was on New Year's Eve
for
$1 million.
Yeah. Such a good opportunity for fighters, especially considering, you know, shady pay.
Well, yeah. So there are, and I think a lot of fighters from the other big organizations, like maybe Bellator and the UFC, are looking and going, hey, that dude was in the UFC. I beat him. He just was fighting for $1 million or they're getting paid so well, you know, big investors on board, and they see the longevity of creating a true sports format with MMA. And it's exciting. There's no politics.
Right.
We all know that when it comes to matching fights, there's some degree of rankings having a say, but also about what makes a good fight.
Right.
Yeah. You know, and what's great about this is they know if they win, they go
through. Move on.
If they don't,
That's a lot more incentive, I feel like.
And it's quite nice to follow a league. Mm-hmm. Quite often, I think there's so many fights on nowadays that you're like, well, where is this person in the whole grand scheme of what I'm watching? But with this, you're following their story and you're following their frequency. And a lot of them who have come from wrestling backgrounds or even judo tournaments, they like being regular, you know, just getting to fight regularly and then having an off season.
Seems like there's some sort of consistency to that, you know, because even in other organizations, like win or lose, you don't really know when you're going to fight, which I think the financial instability and also just like you said, the mental sort of like instability of not really like the uncertainty, you know, just not knowing when, I think would be really frustrating.
Yeah. So, and I think that's what a lot of them have. I think, I don't know, individual pay specifically, but I think they're on good money and they know they can win big money, life-changing money. You know, I was the one that New Year's Eve, I personally was stepping in the cage to interview them, which was a new thing for me. I'd never done the in-cage interviews. Right. I was like, hey, Joe Rogan, I like this position. And giving them the check, you know, literally helping hand them this
changing somebody's life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I imagine cutting weight is also a lot easier when, you know, specifically when you need to do it and then after what date you don't need to do it anymore.
I think what they were typically doing was just keeping their weight down for the whole season. They couldn't afford to fluctuate too much in between because they were fighting too often, you know. This year's going to be tough because we've got rid of the middleweight division. So our middleweights are either going down to welterweight, which is big jump down for some of them, or they're going up and I guess a little undersized. But the reason is because we brought in the women's division this year. The lightweights. Kayla Harrison, two times
amazing
gold Olympic junior medalist. And she's our golden girl. She did a few exhibition matches for us.
Yep.
Or should I say fights for us last year. And won every fight.
Yeah.
there's a lot of Ronda similarities in that once she gets them to the ground, you're like, oh, the arm. So, yes. But she proved she finished in different ways as well. She finished with TKOs and as well as the armbar, and I'm excited to see what she does.
Yeah, me as well. I mean, like, if there's anyone to have as like the face of the women's division, it's the most wholesome person.
She's great. She's so nice, but you know that she's a killer inside. Mm-hmm. Oh, like, yeah. She's a winner. Oh, yeah. Like, nothing, even the wins she got, she was mostly not satisfied.
Right.
She should have done it quicker in her mind, or, you know,
well, even
more effectively.
Following her on Instagram and watching her training videos, you're just like, this person is lethal. Yeah. It's so insane to think about.
Well, she trains with the best. She's training with Amanda Nunes and obviously a bit lighter, but Joanna Jędrzejczyk and those girls. Yeah. So she's, although her mixed martial arts experience is less than theirs, she's training with the best. It's interesting though, because I think her goal was ultimately always to get to Cyborg.
Right.
And probably the UFC in that capacity. But now, obviously, since Cyborg lost to Amanda, Amanda's her training partner. She's not going to be fighting Amanda. So I don't know, maybe Cyborg's still the ultimate goal, depending on what she does next with her career.
What will happen with Cyborg now? What to do with that?
I mean, look, she won one fight. She's still absolute beast. Still,
pioneer and legend.
I mean, if she wants to come to PFL,
there you go. I mean, that would be imagine next year. Oh, it's like Kayla in the PFL. I know.
Wow,
give the people the fights they want. I don't care what organization, just make it happen.
Yeah. But it's nice with us all being on ESPN. It's just become the home of mixed martial arts now.
And you know, I mean, like, just speaking of Rogan, he always talks about how, you know, different we need all the different organizations.
Yeah.
You know, like, I think it's easy to get lost.
It's good to have competition.
Yeah, it's super good to have competition. And you know, just depending on the UFC, while it, of course, it is like the gold standard, it doesn't mean that PFL is any, you know, better or worse, whatever. Same with Bellator. There are good fights regardless of
organization.
Yeah,
there's good fighters in both. And with Thursday nights, UFC typically, well, mostly Saturday nights, so we're almost like driving that weekend appetite for the fight. So
when I know, like, I personally come home, she told me the other day, she was like cooking or something, she's like, go in the living room and do that thing that you do, just go pretend to watch basketball or whatever, you know. and I like to have, because when I come home, I like to turn on sports to kind of relax my mind.
Just,
you know,
as background?
Yeah. No, I actually genuinely do watch it, but despite what you may think. But you know, it would be nice.
Well, I don't doubt that you watch it.
Yeah, but it's nice to come home and, you know, turn on a fight and just be able to watch and be like, oh God, this is amazing.
It's
going
to be a lot
of
fights to watch.
Yeah. And I love the big Saturday events and I love Friday night sort of stuff, but it is an event. It is a massive sort of commitment sometimes. Yeah. So it is nice to have something kind of, like you said, lead up a like little appetizer into the.
Exactly. And we really want to, you know, hammer home the point of difference that this is a league format. There will be a champion at the end. You know, they're going to be winning a lot of money. And I think that then engages people week in, week out to watch it. You
it's
know?
A very understandable, simple, ubiquitous way to decide.
And it's good. We start May the 9th. We're in Long Island. First event, we've got our women's lightweights and our men's welterweight. The welterweights is going to be a really tough division this year, because we've got some top middleweights coming down.
Right.
Obviously the best welterweights. And then the next one will be the, I believe it's the men's featherweights and the men's lightweights. And then we've got the light heavyweights and the heavyweights for the final first round of the regular season. Huh. So they fight twice in the regular season and then obviously playoffs and then finals. So
it's pretty cool too that like one thing that we talk about and one of the goals of our show obviously is to get people's stories out there, and I think it, especially when it comes to fighting, maybe it's kind of different than other sports in the sense that it's the fight is enriched by knowing the fighter's story, you know. And I think with a season, you can, rather than trying to cram everything, you know, I always feel like we're very stuck into it and follow these things and religiously like read everything about a fighter and we know their whole story, and I think that maybe that's like a barrier to entry for a lot of people, just because a lot of people don't have all the time to do that.
Yeah. Well, this is it. And that's how I fell in love with the sport in the first place, was getting to know the actual fighters and their stories, you know, the person behind the fighting. And it makes it harder as you become more invested in these people and their family and their friends and their partners and their children. It's harder to watch them lose.
Right.
You know, you do naturally develop friendships with these people. So it's, and especially as you're following them through the league, you know, it's heartbreaking sometimes. It's just someone's dreams being crushed, you know?
Somebody has to come out a winner.
Yeah, and in some ways with the Professional Fighters League format, it's more devastating, because it's not like, oh, well, that was just a fight. You've got another fight in 3 months or 4 months' time. It's like, no, you're out this season now.
Right.
That's you're done until next time.
So sad, but also very good. Yeah, and I feel like you can kind of tell their stories in increments instead of just trying to tell, you know, because And I think it's great, you know, what the UFC is doing with these ESPN, what are they called, Destined or whatever, where they talk to the fighters, like, before and after. I know they did, like, a special about Kron, and they did one about Michelle Waterson, but you can only put that much production effort into so many people, whereas I feel like if you're getting little bits and pieces, you get parts of their stories in more digestible ways, and if you're following the season, you can kind of get to know that person over the course of, you know, like you would a TV show or something.
Yeah, we really did. Like, for example, our middleweight champion, Lewis Taylor, last season, I mean, he's one of the oldest guys in the division, comes from a really rough area of Chicago. You know, he's always been a big proponent of put the guns down, Taylor. So get rid of gun crime, et cetera. Yeah. So a lot of them are using their platform to make a difference and really try and speak out. We learned with John Howard, former UFC fighter as well, Doomsday, he found out he had was diagnosed with autism. He didn't know what was wrong with him his whole life until more recently. And then he suddenly everything makes sense. So he goes and speaks to kids about, look what I've achieved and I live with this, you know? Yeah. And they've all got their reason, stories and their reason. I mean, our tagline is, what do you fight for? So we do tell that story. Yeah, we tell that story throughout the whole season. You know, what do you fight for? And it becomes apparent. Ray Cooper III, there was an incredible story that his dad fought Jake Shields back in the day, and they won one and lost one each. So this was Ray Cooper III, who Ray Cooper Jr.'s son, was there to win back that fight for his dad. And he did, and he did it twice. Yeah. He beat Jake Shields twice. And Jake Shields, one of the best fighters there's been, an absolute legend. So this story played out. But once he'd beaten Jake and we went past that, we then just saw the force of the Hawaiian family he has. They call it Ohana. Ohana. Yeah, I love that. And we saw like tens and tens of them all turn up for his fights. They've flown all the way from Hawaii to New York and all different places around the country to watch him. So we get to know the family.
Right.
We've got Kelvin Tiller, nicknamed the mama's boy. And, you know, Patricia Raines, his mama, she's on the sideline and I'm sitting next to her trying to get these pieces, you know, on the microphone. So, yeah, you get to know the family and the story as you go
along. Well, I feel like this format also gives the fighters more autonomy with how much information they share, what they share, because like Michelle said, with the UFC and Bellator too, they try to like, the company tries to give the overview of who the person that is fighting, but then with PFL, it's like, nope, you just gotta kind of follow them along.
Yeah.
I think that, it's
well, and like we were really talking about kind of before we started recording about the violence of it, I think, you know, we're talking about how I think everyone sitting here understands the sport beyond the violence. And I think it's very hard for some people who don't follow the sport to see past that. And I think that, like we're saying, you know, when you understand the story a bit more, you can see it really for, I think, for what it is and not just as like, I think it's easy to hate and throw a violence blanket over and be like, oh, that's just violence. But when you actually, you know, like you said, ask what is this person fighting for, it becomes so much more existential and important and meaningful, I think, which and is.
The way I look at it is that it's one of the most primal things you can do, you know, from the very beginning, people fought whatever they were fighting for, land, family, whatever it is. It's a primal thing. And now there's rules and regulations around it, but still there's something about it. No matter who you are, if I put you in that arena, whether it's UFC, PFL, belt, whatever it is, and you watch a fight, you can't help but be drawn into what you're seeing and what you're watching. And especially if you sit close to the cage for the first time. And I took my boyfriend with me to one of the PFL fights and he'd not been to a live fight. He said what he was so surprised about was the noise, like hearing the contact. Yeah. And that was a little bit, that's interesting for him as well. And I guess I've become numb to it. Mm-hmm. I mean, from where I'm standing, whether it's backstage or cage side, I'm looking for my story. I'm looking for what's playing out, what's happening. How things are turning around, you know, it's that journalism going along as well as enjoying the fight. So I guess I'm not focused on the damage.
Right.
There's been a few occasions when obviously Anderson Silva snapped his leg and as a network, we played that back over and over again and we slow-moed it and we reversed it and we did everything possible with it. And by the end, I was like, okay, we get it. We get this. And there's been certain things that I found it hard to watch, but we see that in soccer as well. We've seen, you know,
that was
compound fractures.
The first card that my grandma agreed to watch. So, because my dad and I, you know, watched a little bit before, and that was like, I think it was December 29th, like something so close to
the end. I was also watching with my dad.
Yeah. And she was getting really into it, and, you know, because like Ronda fought beforehand, she got really into that. And then Anderson's leg breaks. And I was like, oh no.
Yeah, this wasn't the one to watch.
Yeah. But then she was actually very concerned for him. I think it's like a grandma thing probably. Because in the days and the weeks following that, she was always like, how is that guy that broke his leg? Is it all good? And she still like asks me about his leg all the time.
There's a few things that are, but you know, that can happen in different ways.
Yeah,
but
freak accident.
I get it. It can be blooded and it can be brutal, mm-hmm. and it is. But again, like you said, what are they fighting for? But also, if you break it down and you look at the skill sets, the chess match that's playing out and all of those different things, I think once you learn a little bit about the sport and a little bit about the people involved, that's enough to capture you and captivate you and make you want to watch more. Because I've sometimes tuned into fights from other organizations, not known any fighters, and I'm casually watching. I'm fairly enjoying it, but it's completely different when I've followed the story and the build up to the fight.
I have a friend who is really into like sports betting, and I told him, he asked me if I bet on fights, and I was like, no, it's not worth it because no matter how much knowledge you have, it can never happen. And you know, when I say this to the layperson, they're like, yeah, but anything can happen in any sport. And I'm like, yeah, but in like basketball, you know, if you're down 30 points, you can still theoretically make that up. But if you just hit
It's a single discipline. So you kind of know exactly what the outcome is going to be. But then with fighting,
we can
like,
kind of pace yourself in a lot of ways. But I think in fighting,
and then you take the judges into account.
And Sometimes.
Who knows, you know? Yeah, it's frustrating. We always backstage, actually. So my job with BT Sport, we're backstage. So we're one of the first ones to interview the fighters when they come backstage, which for me is such an honor because you get that raw motion and emotion and just feeling, you know, okay, they've had a couple of minutes to process it since that Joe Rogan interview in the cage or whoever they've spoken to, you know, they go straight from the cage, they walk backstage, they get paid and go to medical. I think that's like medical and paid, that's the order. And then there'd be us journalists backstage. And usually if we're in the US, ESPN get priority. Take on it and then they come to us, or if we're in the UK we might get to go first and whatever. So they've had a few moments to digest it, but you're still getting that raw emotion and feeling. And I feel one of the best interviews I've ever done in terms of just the way it went viral and the enjoyment, but no, enjoyment's the wrong word actually, because I'm about to tell you someone that lost, but the, no, bear with me, the privilege I had to interview the person was when Connor lost to Nate when they fought the first time. And I was basically told, look, you can talk to him, but you've got to walk and talk to him. We've got to get him to the press conference. And it's always difficult to interview someone that's lost as opposed to someone that's won. Because that's easy. Yeah. You know, amazing, you know, et cetera. But
especially somebody like him.
Connor's he's such a pro. And we did. We walked and talked. The camera was going up and down. We're going all around the back alleys of the MGM. I mean, and just how reflective and how much he understood where he went wrong, what happened, was I think won him a lot of fans at that. Well, not that he hasn't got a lot of fans, but I think a lot of people were like, okay, that was such a mature, it wasn't a brush kind of bravo, oh, I'll get him next time. It was just very insightful and it was interesting. And it was a hard one for me to do because obviously he lost, but it was also one that when I look back, I'm like, that was actually a really good interview because it was
a great one,
so real, you know, and in the moment of what just happened.
Yeah.
What has it been like for you kind of witnessing his entire, I guess, rise and fall, rise again, all of his ups and downs from the very beginning?
I mean, I always say that I like Connor a lot and I've been covering his career from...
He's my...
Yeah, from he when paper. He came into the...
Oh, is he on your phone?
Oh, amazing.
A painting of him in front of my bed. So. every morning I wake up, I assume.
He's just different.
Yeah.
And that's what I say about Connor. He's different, he's intelligent, and he knows the game better than anyone else. And I've interviewed him a lot. We've had a lot of conversations outside of the MMA world about training and injuries and rehab, and he's personally helped me a lot with things like that. And he's very personable and a good guy. I mean, of course, there's been lots of incidences of late. And, you know, I think we all just want to see him get back in there. And I don't personally think he's retired fully forever at all. I think he'll be back, but he doesn't need to.
Yeah.
You know, when you think about what he's achieved. I had the honor of doing a sit-down live audience interview with him following his Mayweather fight. Uh-huh. So it was in Glasgow and it was an audience with Conor McGregor and we hosted it, where they held the Commonwealth Games on this big stage. God, hundreds, thousands of people pay for tickets just
to UK has come.
To sit and listen to him talk. And it was the first interview he did post Mayweather, apart from the very initial step out of the ring interviews. And I was blown away by how much he was still so upset that he lost, because in our mind it was like, well, it was boxing, it's not your sport. Yeah, you know, yeah. You haven't really lost anything in that sense. You made a huge amount of money.
Yeah.
But he was still talking through every part of that fight and the decisions and the calls and how he felt he was maybe hard done by in certain mm-hmm. places a little bit during that fight. And he's an out and out true competitor. So when a lot of us say, well, he doesn't need to fight again, when you have that inner athlete in you, yeah. you have that fighter in you, that's what you do. That's what right, yeah. you want to
How
do.
How could you
so,
just give it up?
Yeah. yeah. It's like giving up a part of you that's yeah. you've, right. you've always known. So I think we'll see him in there again. And I hope so, because he lights up an event in a different way to anyone else can really do.
Absolutely. And it's like, you know, fair, he's done some things that are you really don't want to have in your history. But then when people give him hate just strictly based on that, you're like, you do the same thing that he did. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, like, no one could condone any of the violence that take place outside of the
cage. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Kind of absolutely.
But when it came to the Khabib fight, I mean, I personally like Khabib. I think he's an incredible fighter, and he's been at a lot of our PFL events as well, because there's been a lot of Dagestani fighters that have been in Ali. He's caught, I think one night he cornered like four of them one after another, and they all won. But that fight was different. That was more personal than, I don't know if Conor was treating it personally, but when it comes to religion and family and that kind of thing, it's a delicate situation. Yeah. And I think they were both treating that differently.
Especially,
we saw, you know, with the results we saw.
From where, like, the side of the world Khabib comes from. It's like in America, don't get really offended.
It means so much more. You know what was a shame though? And obviously any incident can be turned into publicity and promotion when they're to fight again or whatever. That's always the case. But at the time, Khabib just didn't need to do that. He'd won, you know, in my mind, he could have walked away, taken his check, been in there fighting again fairly soon and become one of the biggest fighters of all time. I was there at that fight. I was backstage. We kind of saw the aftermath of everyone spilling out, and Dana White kind of like coming to talk to us and updating us every kind of 5 minutes. And it was crazy. And it was kind of upsetting as well in some ways. But look, when you think how much testosterone and adrenaline's pumping at those times,
well, and
at the end of the day,
back,
if you're a fighter, you're a fighter.
Yeah.
You know,
that built up for a long time.
Yeah. And he had been so quiet about things, you know, while I don't think that it was the right action, I can empathize with, you know, I don't know what I would have done in that situation if someone was saying those sort of things to me, you know.
And it shows as well that he, although I think his ban was a lot shorter than the year, wasn't it? He's taken the full year, because he said if his brothers, as he says, can't fight, he won't fight. You know, it just goes to show how important
family
is to them.
Very personally.
Yeah.
Any kind of honor sliding.
Mm. We were in Vegas. During that fight, and it was just such a bizarre, we were down the street at Twin Peaks watching it, and it was just such a bizarre sort of environment now that I'm like thinking back on it, because leading up to it, you know, I think I love them both equally, and so I had no preference on who won. I was like, this is a fight for the fans, like I'm just happy that this is happening.
Well, I wanted Conor to win, because obviously I'm English and he's Irish and he's the one we get behind.
But, you know, seeing all the Irish fans, like the environment, and that's where we want to go, you know, to see the environment of all the people.
Feel
and
feel the atmosphere.
And then just for it to end that way, it was so, I remember just leaving, just feeling so like sad. And
it was an anticlimax, wasn't it?
It really did. I don't know, for me in the moment being there, it really took away from the actual like moment of him winning. Cause you know, he outclassed Conor, which I thought was a fantastic performance. It was so fun to watch, and it could have just, like you said, been ended with that. Could have ended with that, and he could have just moved on. And then, you know, the next day, those Conor, we were wearing Khabib shirts, and their fans, Conor fans, yelling
That's
at us.
Brave of you. The whole of Ireland descends on Vegas.
We got cussed out, so that was fun.
It was
You know, it was just a really,
it was bizarre.
I just wish that it didn't have to end that way.
And look, having said what I said about obviously wanting Conor to win with that, I can also appreciate a good fight and a good fighter and a lot of respect for Khabib also. But for us backstage, you know, waiting for the interviews, usually after the final event, that's when the buzz happens.
Yeah.
That's when everyone's spilling out. And not only are we waiting to interview them, but their teams are around us. And it was just different. Mm-hmm. No one was allowed in. Everyone was being carted off or arrested or whatever.
The arena.
It was just a very quiet, sterile. Yeah. Once the kind of craziness calmed down, it was just us waiting, not knowing. Mm-hmm. We were there for hours and hours waiting, like, who will turn up at a press conference?
It's
what do we need to do, or what story do we need to capture?
How, like, the biggest card in the history so far, and then the aftermath of it is just like crickets.
It always scares me when there's such a big named car that yeah. there's so much hype and excitement before, because something always goes wrong where they don't even make it into yeah. into the octagon yeah. or
well UFC you know, 200
yeah it's there.
Oh my god.
You know, they moved a whole card for John Jones, didn't they, recently to Los Angeles?
I remember, John, I mean, we're also huge John fans, but it's really hard to be one. I remember.
Really hard to separate the man inside the cage and his extracurricular shenanigans, I would say.
I think what's hard is that, you know, I've interviewed John many times as well, and each time, you know, you listen to why, how things have changed and all the rest of it, and then something goes and happens again, and you think, like, okay, it hasn't changed. But I also think he's, you know, he was one of the youngest and
the youngest,
23.
You know, young guy, all this money and fame and whatever, and so many people around him. And it's easy to see how that can happen.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, yeah. I think even, you know, with what happened, like Conor and Habib, it's that when you're around so much energy that is hyping you up, like what they did leading up to it and then the aftermath, reprehensible, but like that level is very tantalizing, you know? And so I don't know when people like really make strict statements about like, oh, this is bad. And it's like, well, put yourself in that situation. Imagine yourself at like this massive peak, you know, that you probably never even imagined in your entire life. And then I feel like I would be drunk with all of that too.
I get stuck between two places because I'm guilty of, after things like that have happened, when they then get to fight again, or whoever had the altercation gets to fight for the first time, the storyline draws me in to feel this like real behind this as well. Right. But at the same time, I'm like, well, this has come about because something that shouldn't have happened.
Yeah.
Like, UFC London just recently, and Jorge Masvidal Leon Edwards backstage, you know, Leon Edwards came out of that Gunnar Nelson fight, not a scratch on his face. And then he ends up with this after, you know, taking a hit backstage, which was a complete misunderstanding. I mean, Laura Sanko was interviewing Jorge. I was stood by ready to go next to interview him for BT Sport. Leon walked by and I think he just said, "You and me, Vegas." I think it was something like that. Yeah, I don't think Jorge heard what he said. He just heard something. So he walks along with his hands behind his back thinking he's been, you know, threatened or, I don't know, questioned, and throws a punch. And then it just all kind of exploded from there. Yeah. And all that happened is no one got to interview anyone. They both disappeared and they're not getting the fight. But I think Jorge's had these t-shirts. Which are quite funny. It's like three pieces in the soda. Which is funny, but it's because you did something so bad. You're not meant to do, you know? I get stuck between liking the story, but realizing that, you know, all this stuff that happens outside the cage is what's making the fight, and should it? I don't know.
Yeah.
It does.
It's a hard like intersection between the sports and the entertainment, I think more so than any other sort of sport. You know, it's really hard because you need the promotion. You want to sell
fights and, you know, you fights want to sell when there's a story.
And it would be great if we could just have good matchups, put them in the cage, see who wins and move on. And maybe one day we'll get to that point, but it just seems like the drama is always somehow entangled, and sometimes it's really nasty to me.
Think about some fighters who do not talk whatsoever, but you know, like a Robbie Lawler.
He won't say
much at all, but you know, when he goes in the cage, you're gonna get such an exciting fight with Robbie. So some people can just let their fights do the talking because they put on such wars for us in the past.
Yeah.
But I
think even his persona outside of the octagon, this kind of like quiet, also almost mysterious way that he carries himself, I think that like his silence speaks as loudly as like Conor.
Yeah.
And then there's people kind of in the middle that don't really know which way to go.
They try a bit of the talking that suit them, or they're quiet but also not got maybe the action in the cage. Yeah, it's a balance. We always want, as broadcasters, as journalists, we want a story.
Well, conflict.
But at the end of the day, you want a fight. And it doesn't matter how big the story is if you don't get a performance that's...
I think Masvidal actually brought up this Leon Edwards thing, and he was saying on Rogan, he was talking about it, and he was like, I don't want to talk about this. And he's like, you know,
he said that to me in our interview. Yeah. He's like, I don't want to give him the time.
Yeah, he's like, I won. And I think he does have a really good point. It's like, to go to London and to beat Darren in that way, it was like one of the most shocking things.
Yeah,
it was
a great performance. Yeah. I feel sorry for Leon Edwards, though. Yeah. I mean, Leon's unbeaten now in what, eight, seven, and not getting
the credit that he deserves.
You know, he's not getting recognition or credit. Is that because he's not a talker? He started to talk a bit more. He's talking trash with Darren before the fight. He was talking trash with Jorge. Yeah. He went and beat Gunnar Nelson. I mean, that's a
huge, a big scale. That's another quiet person that.
Yeah. Yeah. But again, Gunnar's quietness is different as well. It's that Viking kind of what's he going to do thing. So I don't know. I don't know why Leon can't catch a break in terms of a.
Yeah, there's a lot of people like that. I really wonder, you know, like what do they need to do? And I just don't like this trend that people are slipping into, you know. Maybe it's turning around.
The margin between like, oh, we're just, you know, shenanigans, talking some smack, and then very quickly goes to 100 when people like start
assault, fighting. Literal assault.
Yeah, because like what is professional fighting? It's you sign a piece of paper that says you're not gonna like press charges against the other person, essentially.
Because it is
assault. Like it's only legal inside the confines of whatever.
It's when you say it like that, it's quite funny, isn't it?
Yeah. And people love it.
Well, this is something we talk about. People say to me, especially with women, why do women like watching fighting? You know, what attracts a woman to want to watch it? And
yeah.
I think it comes down to what we said, it just being a very primal act.
It's very honest. Know? It's like really hard to be fake when you're smashing your fist into someone.
And you
someone.
See that when two guys that maybe did have some beef with each other leading into it. I think once you've shared a not that I've been in a cage myself, but what they say is once you've shared a cage with someone, you've especially if they have an out and out war, you have that respect.
Like T-City,
like you were the only two people that really understood what happened.
Yeah. So it's like a weird brand of intimacy.
Mm. Oh yeah, that's a good way of putting it. Yeah.
Because it's only you. I mean, I think Israel said this recently about Kelvin. He was like, every time I look in the mirror for the next 2 weeks, like, I'm just gonna think of him, you know? I have no other choice. And so this is like my brother for life. Like, we're bonded in this way, you know? And it's like, I don't know, such an interesting.
And I think unless there's like a pure, real hatred, then I think if it's more just talk leading up to it and they share that cage.
Yeah.
You know, that night was incredible with Kelvin at the Sanya.
After the fight ended, I was like, Corey. We have another one.
I know. I forgot.
It was so good.
Nights
come along like that.
Oh, yes. And you really feel how special.
Yeah.
Those are very good fights to have just kind of like more on the casual side people to watch because that magnetism that even comes off the screen.
Yeah.
It's.
And what Dana said, he said, for people that don't like interim title fights, you know, look what those interim titles gave us because they were fighting for something.
For something.
Yeah. It meant something to them. And,
And it first time in a long time, I think I've cared about interim.
Oh, really? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I felt the same.
I want to ask you, you know, I'm going to flatter you here maybe, but, you know, you're such like a beautiful feminine woman.
Oh,
and like, I think that a lot of people on the outside look at the sport and they think like, I know we've experienced it. Like people asking about the women that are involved in the sport, if they're all butch lesbians or well, you know, all these things.
Or
that,
just like something's wrong with
them. There's always this assumption that like something must be wrong with you for liking it. And I want to ask, you know, what has your experience been like being like a very beautiful feminine woman being in this such a violent sport? You know, has it helped you? Has it hurt? Like, has it hindered you from doing certain things? Or, you know, what is it?
Well, firstly, thank you. To be honest, when people ask what I do and, you know, I'm a sports broadcaster and I work on fights, UFC, boxing, PFL. People are shocked. Yeah, the first reaction is, but then it's like, wow, cool.
Yeah.
You know, I think most people think that's really cool. You know, and especially if it's someone that's into that sport themselves, it could be a friend's husband, partner, boyfriend, whatever. And suddenly, like, I have something to talk to this chick about. You know, this is really exciting. So I think a lot of people are kind of surprised and think it's pretty cool. But the other girls that do what I do, you know, Megan and Laura and Karen Layla in the UK now as well, we all just love the sport and we want to give an honest account of it. And we want to be able to tell the story. And for me, like I said earlier, just having been an athlete myself, even though it wasn't the sport I did, I can relate. It was a multidiscipline sport, which is exactly what I did with the heptathlon. And I know what it takes. And I think something that helps me in this job is having been an athlete and you have that insight into, it's not just, oh, you lost, you know.
Yeah.
It's like, I know what that feels like. Yeah. I know what it feels like to have trained for months and months, years on end, and it to either have gone how you wanted or didn't go how you wanted. And it's not a feeling you forget. And I think there's that common understanding between you. So I feel that's why I'm so drawn to it. When it was first presented to me many years ago, when I started with BT Sport, there was a part of me that thought, is this going to be good for me to be in? Because the sport wasn't so well known or respected in the UK back then. So there was a part of me that thought, is this a good move for me career-wise? Mm-hmm. You know, this is seen as a brutal sport. That's still the perception, especially in the UK. At the end of the day, I just thought, no, hang on. Do I like it? Yeah. Is it a great opportunity? Yeah. Could it lead to other things? Yeah. Okay. Let's do it. And let's tackle those questions when they come up. And what I found myself doing now is I'm so defensive of the sport to other people. I get angry for people that try and, without understanding or even wanting to understand, that's the most annoying thing. Just that throwaway kind of, oh, that's just brutal. And I don't know you're involved in that. And I'm not very good at just thinking, okay, like let them have their opinion.
Yeah,
I'm,
well, me neither.
I'm not trying to necessarily change their opinion, but I definitely want to let them know that they're not informed with what they're saying.
Yeah.
So the short answer is fell in love with the sport, love my job, absolutely love my job. Yeah, and that's people's reaction as well. They're like, oh my God, you get to speak to all these people you get to actually kind of spend time with them. And sometimes I think about it, I'm like, yeah, I'm probably stood right now where any fan in the world for this sport would die to stand or talk to these people. You know, and the times that I've got to go to their homes to do features and documentaries and tell the stories is incredible
huge honor,
to me as well.
Yeah.
And you know what? I've not come across one fighter that hasn't been incredibly respectful and given me their time. And I've worked with a lot of other sports and a lot of other athletes from other sports. They don't want to do the media stuff. It's an obligation. It's not what they want to do. And of course, some fighters are more comfortable than others, but I think they very much want to grow their sport. And I think when you come from a sport that's not as mainstream as football, basketball, et cetera, that you feel it's your duty to do that. And they give us their time. They always do.
And like you said, like, and we always talk about this, you know, a lot of people have this idea that fighters, because it's this violent sport, that they're violent
themselves or all the time.
Aggressive.
And look, there's different types of fighters. Of some do come from, they've got that little bit of crazy and they come from the street fighting background. Others are out and out martial artists, George St. Pierre, Uriah Hall as well. I've had many conversations with him and
my favorite.
With Uriah's a great guy. And I don't think he's a killer. I think he's a very good athlete. And I think he battles that with himself a little bit as well.
You can tell he's very scared of his abilities.
I mean, when he unleashes, it's crazy. But his mind has to be in the right place for him to do that. But coming back to what you said about being a woman in this sport, I took a lot of crap when I first started doing this. Because when I first started on BT Sport, the audience, the mix, because we had a very niche audience of fight fans that have been doing it for years. They didn't know who I was. I was just suddenly this blonde chick that was talking about their sport. And I'll admit, my knowledge was more limited back then, but I was doing my best relating it to what I knew in sport and using my pundits to tell the story. And the amount of abuse I got on social media from those fans, just like, who's this blonde bitch talking about sport? You know, all this kind of, it was just, some of it was almost made me think, oh my God, I've destroyed my career. Like, I shouldn't have entered into this sport where maybe I don't know as much as I should do at this point. But I stuck with it. And it was quite funny because 7-8 months in, the network decided to just change up our studio show. And they had me going out doing features. And they brought in a different guy who was a comedian stroke UFC fan, fight fan, to do the main hosting. It turned out a blessing in disguise for me because firstly, I got introduced to UFC Fight Pass, which then led to work directly with UFC as well. Secondly, one, the fans got used to me by then and they didn't like that I wasn't at the desk because you prove yourself or whatever. And secondly, they didn't particularly like that a comedian was making light of their sport.
Right.
So I ended up coming back into that position, having then gained a position with Fight Pass. And, you know, things happen for a reason, but it's funny. You have to prove yourself. And with anything new, when you're not known, people are going to give you shit. The odd thing now, but in this line of business, you just have to develop a thick skin. In the same way the fighters get talked crap about by the fans, you know, some of the things they must have to read is horrendous, but we do as well. And some people are going to like me, some are going to dislike me for no reason that's personal to me. You might not like the sound of my voice. You might not
just
like what I wore. You might not like one thing I said about a particular fighter, but all I'll do is try and tell the story and be as prepared as I can be for everything. And one thing I've always done is like research so heavily. When I started, I was watching the back catalogue of every fight that's ever been, you know, and just, it was hard in the beginning because it's just for one show, the hours I used to have to put into just to be able to make sure I could answer any question that that came to me. And it's easy now because I've been through all the fights. I've been there. I've spoken and met nearly everyone that's involved. But it was tough in the beginning and I did feel very much out of my comfort zone.
It's funny how I feel like women maybe get a disproportionate amount of hate. I know Karen spoke about how she thinks that some of it stems from these people online or whatever. You know, you're getting to talk to Conor McGregor.
And they're jealous.
And they're jealous, you know, because they think like, I want to be bros with Conor McGregor.
Well, people
like,
think it's easy. They think this is what people don't understand when it comes to television. You are not just standing there having a nice little conversation with somebody.
Right.
I have an earpiece in and in my ear, there's someone counting. And that count is till the end of the conversation when we have to go to a VT or throwback to the cage.
Yeah.
I've got a director and a producer talking to me. I'm hearing all the noise that goes to the camera. I'm also trying to listen to the guest as well as engaged. Follow a running order that's in front of me. And remember the name of this Dagestani fighter that fought 3 hours ago tonight, whose name I didn't know how to pronounce very well in the first place. And now I need to just quickly for it to come to me. So it's very easy to criticize when you're just watching, as opposed to when you're following a format with a million different voices in your ear, trying to then respond to what you're actually hearing. So it's far more, especially when you're live and especially when you're doing a produced show, it's very different to my job when I'm just backstage with the microphone doing an interview backstage. Right. So when you're actually at the desk, or when I do more for the PFL than I do for the UFC or BT Sport, should I say, is a lot more that goes into it than people think. You know?
Much
and then you've got the noise of the arena around you as well. And you think to yourself, I actually didn't hear anything then, but let's carry on. So it is harder. And I think that's what blows some people's mind when they realize actually what goes into it, especially what Karen does with ESPN and what I do with PFL and ESPN. It's a little bit different to that backstage. Hey, you know, okay, great finish, talk us through it, you know, et cetera. So they're two very different jobs. And I love the backstage because it's that live interaction with someone.
Yeah, the energy.
But I like the technicality of a studio environment. It's just a lot more pressurized.
It's, wow, such a surprise that, you know, this takes a lot of effort. And you guys as professionals do your job. Like, the people that think that... And it's so easy to just like stand there and hold a microphone next to someone.
The funniest moment I had last season on the PFL was Magomed Kerimov for Bojan Veličković. So I'm going, okay. So earlier tonight we had Magomed Kerimov versus Bojan Veličković following the fight of, and I was just like, oh, it's like my brain, like what happened? Did I say that right? And sometimes what comes out your mouth isn't what you think. I watched these back and I had the producer say, oh, that was funny, you said that. I said, no, I didn't. They're like, you did. I said, I didn't. Because that's not, I didn't, wasn't thinking that. They're like, oh, that's what came out your mouth. You're like, oh, geez. I
can't even imagine.
Do you know what? I've learned to laugh those things off. You're live, it happens.
Yeah. Well, I imagine that your background as doing, like you said, a multidisciplinary sport and then going through all of these kind of little niche, like strongman and like working your way up to the ultimate niche. But like, so there's a beautiful like parallel there that happens. And as a competitive athlete, I'm sure you were used to the goal of just like the crowds, like when you were competing and all of that noise. So
this is a dream for me this year to be on ESPN, because when I moved to the US from London 3 years ago, my goal was to get on a US network.
Yeah.
And a lot of people said it takes you a couple of years when you move country to really set yourself up, because you go from being in a country where I was established with a network, you know, within what I do in fitness and health and well-being, you know, I had so many contacts and outlets that I'd write for and work for. And you're kind of starting again. And I was lucky that I, as a British citizen, you can't come to the US without having work offers in place, obviously. So, you know, I had the stuff with Fox. I was working for BT. I was doing my fitness work. But it was still, things don't always translate. We speak the same language. Yeah. I always say this here, but things don't mean the same thing. Yeah. Even the technicalities in the truck when I'm doing live, like I hear words, I'm like, I don't know if we use that word. I don't know what that means. So, you know, I'm still learning. But for me, the goal was, I did a little bit for Fox, but the goal was to be on a US network. And last year we did NBC Sports, which was amazing. And this year ESPN. So yeah, for me personally, if you look at no longer the athlete myself, but the broadcaster, you know, getting onto ESPN, it's so exciting. I can't wait for us to show our, you know, our program, our organization, if you like, to a wider audience
and
have a chance to be a part of that. And actually my role this year will be to be in the cage doing post-fight interviews. So I'm really excited about that. The only thing is I've got to completely rethink my footwear, because I'm now no longer allowed a stiletto because I'm going to make holes in the camera. So when I did the New Year's Eve show, I got these really big, ugly block heeled shoes. So wardrobe have been tasked with finding me some nice looking heels that I can actually wear.
That'll
in the
be
cage.
So fun though, you know, you can pick your outfits out. Like, you know how Bruce Buffer has like all
special
jackets.
She comes. Fernanda's amazing. I work with Fernanda. She works for the Fox team as well. And she comes around with this like rail full of outfits. And I'm like, oh, let's try on. We sort out the outfit. So no, it is great. And it's just a different level of you know, representation when you're on a big network.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's so cool that mixed martial arts, like as a sport, is getting that mainstream treatment, you know?
I don't see it as niche anymore. I think it's one of the top sports here in America.
Oh, totally. Yeah. And it's funny, like I find even now, you know, when we tell people that we have this podcast, people kind of laugh just because they think it's weird that two girls are talking about fighting and stuff. And the number one thing I say when I come home to talk to Nadia about this, I go, you can laugh, but this sport sold for $4 billion. Like, yeah, you know, like, and if that's not a good indicator of the growth, I don't know what is.
I don't know if it still is, but at one point the UFC was the fastest growing sports organization. Oh, totally. Well, it probably still is, you know, and there's more competition now from the other organizations too. So I've gone from having to explain it to just now feeling like it's super cool. I'm proud to be a part of it. And that's just been the shift in the last 5 years. It's really changed. So I know it's
so exciting to think about.
If someone had told me 5 years ago, you will probably spend most of your life, I wake up and I read News Now MMA, you know, and whatever else is going on. If someone had told me that's what you'd be doing and you'd be watching fights most weekends on your own sometimes.
Yeah.
I go to Barney's on my own sometimes to watch the fights if I'm not covering them. I would have laughed. I would have been like, I don't think so. But yeah, it's funny how life works out. And I always talk about when you're following, this is something I speak about, when you follow your goals, sometimes what you think you're aiming towards
is
you land somewhere which is far greater and, and better and more satisfying than the place you thought you were going. And that, for me, that's come about through being open to opportunities.
Yeah, seems like,
you know, I was an athlete in track and field, and then this opportunity to get involved in bobsled and try out for bobsled came along. That wasn't my ultimate goal. Olympics was my ultimate goal. I was like, okay, I'm open to this. Let's try it. And I ended up in a world championships, which I didn't achieve through track. Right. You know, so, and similar with my hosting career now, this probably wasn't necessarily what I thought I'd be doing, but I've now found it was really what opened up the opportunity for me to come to America as well.
I was going to say,
you just got to be open to opportunities and what things can be.
Yeah, totally.
Well, with your story, especially also with like fighting later, how it's taken you like to so many places. Yeah. It's again, like I'm sitting here and I'm trying to understand how people can still kind of hate on it. It's like, I understand if it's not someone's cup of tea, but like have a negative opinion about it. Like fighting is giving so many people so many chances to like experience the world in many, many different ways.
It's amazing. Yeah, of course, in our job, but also for young kids, you know, one for protection, you know, for self-defense. I think it's fantastic. You know, I'd have kids doing it. Secondly, for kids that do come from rough neighborhoods and would probably fighting would lead them down a whole different dangerous path to prison or whatever, they get a way to channel it into something that they can make a career out of. So fighting's not going away. People are always going to fight in some way or another. And to put rules, safety regulations around it. And, you know, I don't think sometimes the referees get enough credit for the job that they do. We're so easy to say, oh, it was an early stoppage and all this kind of thing. But when I was listening to a podcast with Joe Rogan and Herb Dean recently. Yeah. I don't know if you heard that one.
Yeah, yeah.
He was talking about that stoppage with Robbie Lawler.
Askren.
And he just said what he was looking out for. He said that particular choke is one that they are trained to understand could cause serious long-term damage if it goes in, you know?
Yeah,
so, you know, you've got to think, as much as we're like, the fight, it should have gone on, that's Robbie, he can go forever, you know? He's thinking about this guy not being paralyzed for life. So, you know, it's the sport has a lot of rules and safety around it now. So I think people that aren't aware just don't have the knowledge and insight.
Yeah. Well, it was really also great to see Robbie be very understanding. Like at first,
he's kind of a complete pro. Yeah.
Like irritated, but then he's like, yeah, I get it. You're right. Yeah.
Exactly.
And like you were saying, you know, I think as kids sort of understand, like my sister started doing jiu-jitsu when she was like 11, and she and Nadia literally fight each other, and, and she's 16. And, you know, it's funny because she it's not going to be her life path. She's really into track. You know, she likes soccer, all this stuff, but she has this understanding of violence and like the power and importance of it, maybe. I don't know if those are the right words. And she's had that at such a young age that I don't really think that she has a very different viewpoint of it going into the world. I think it's good because I think the more you understand kind of the damage you can do and the damage that can be inflicted upon you, you're less likely to just use it haphazardly. You know, you're going to de-escalate situations. You're going to kind of do other things and try to avoid the violence because you understand. Whereas I think if you don't understand it, you're much more likely to just go out there
I do a little bit of training now, not for any real purpose. For me, it's more to understand the sport. I want to know what I'm seeing and what's occurring, you know, the chess match with jiu-jitsu, etc. So I've done enough to understand, and people ask me all the time, you know, because I was an athlete myself, would you ever get in the cage, all that kind of thing. And I think it was when Ronda was fighting, I can't remember which fight it was now. It was a while back now in Vegas. It was International Fight Week. And I was sat cage side. And there was a part of me that was like, I'd like to experience walking in. I would quite like to experience that. But I think I prefer the training side than the actual being
What would your walkout song be?
Well, when I was a gladiator, my gladiator name was Ice. Yeah, so my song, if you like, my walkout song was Ice Ice Baby.
I like that. That's awesome. Yeah, that's
pretty
cool.
A really good one. That'd probably be the one. Yeah. That's awesome. But no, I mean, I guess the answer to the question I just posed myself was that I wouldn't ever go in there and do it. I feel like those days are gone now. I'm too injured from other sports and things I've done, but I definitely enjoy the training. I probably want to do a bit more of it, actually.
And part of me thinks that all people that kind of don't really understand the draw of fighting, or like don't really understand how it is a chess match, is they don't know what it's like to know how your body moves and like how to use your body to its like full capacity. And I think that's probably why a lot of fighters are very chill, because they're like, I know what I can do.
Do you know what's different, though? And I think this is what separates a fighter from a non-fighter. We can all do the training and enjoy the training. If you saw another woman's face and it was smashed in and it was blooded, could you continue to hit it? I personally couldn't.
Yeah.
Or you see that their leg's given out and you're gonna target that leg. I couldn't. That's just, I don't have that in me in that way. But that's why I think it takes a different mentality to be able to do that, you know, beyond the training with bags and without so much impact and contact.
Well, our first guest, Laura, we saw her fight in person. Mm. And I mean, she dominated. It was beautiful to watch. But then I was watching her during part of her ground and pound, and I'm like, your elbow is hitting this other woman's face. And then I try to put myself in that position. And like you just said, it's like, I don't.
Yeah, ground and pound's the part of it just, that's particularly nasty for me. If anyone's going to talk about the brutality of it, that's probably, compared to a clean knockout or a submission, that's probably the most brutal part of it.
Yeah.
She's literally being held down.
That's just like the referee's job is to decide when enough's enough. Or for that person to decide themselves when enough's enough.
Yeah.
Some of them are too tough, very good.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, like you said, it takes a really special kind of person. Like professional athletes are like 1% of the 1%. And then with something so raw and like not niche, but kind of specific as fighting, it's like you have to have an extra little cave in your head to do that. And that's also probably why, you know, sparks fly sometimes.
Yeah. Well, I call it that little bit of crazy. In a little bit of crazy
that
sometimes comes out.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's like fascinating trying to balance love and respect for people like that are just have that a little extra in them that allows them to express themselves in such a way. And then, you know, like, well, what outside of the cage when they get into their, you know, troubles and shenanigans, whatever, it's like, you can't have one without the other.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we want to give you the opportunity to let people know where to find you and shout out what you have going on. And you have a great Instagram people can learn how to get fit.
It's quite funny actually because a lot of the work I do is obviously in sport and martial arts, but mixed martial arts. But the big part of my Instagram is my fitness world. Mm-hmm. You know, I was an athlete, I'm a trainer, sports scientist. So my Instagram, which is at Caroline Pierce, is all workouts and diet tips and advice with a little bit of fight pictures and insights thrown in there. I do Insta story a lot. My website, carolinepiercetv.com.
Very good.
Again, you find a lot of my videos and stuff. But just join us on ESPN from May 9th for the start of the Professional Fighters League.
It's going to be
I've just actually got a new fitness app coming out in 4 weeks on app. FitOn. So yeah, that's coming soon.
Oh, what's in the app?
I've got 15 to 20 minute workouts, which are total body workouts. And then I have a workout challenge, which is 6 10-minute workouts that you can mix and match or complete each week. So they're quite high intensity. I've got a really fun one, actually. It's the athlete workout, and every exercise is specific to a different sport.
Replicates
the movements of a different sport. So in 4 weeks' time, they'll be out, and it's FitOn.
Okay.
It's very refreshing to have someone in the fitness industry who like really truly understands athletics and sports science make a product like this.
Thank you. It's my passion. I love it. And that's, you know, the sport and the fitness complement each other very well.
Absolutely.
That's what I do. Thank you
so much for being with us.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks. It's awesome. It's such an exciting conversation.
You're amazing.
Okay.
You can do all my PR.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
All right.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Cage Free Chicks.
If you want to know more about us, slide into our DMs on Instagram and Twitter at Cage Free Chicks, CHIX.
Also, please download, share, and leave us a review on iTunes. We would greatly appreciate it. And if you want to be our next guest, you can reach us by email, cagefreechicks, CHIX, @gmail.com.
Until next time.